Anyway, we'll start. It looked like more DHEP and INO crowd at this time, so I hope others will join. So I take your permission today to conduct my own half colloquium. But before I start, I would like to introduce my co-speaker, Munmun Devi. Munmun Devi is a batch 2009 batch INO students, which is the second batch of INO training school. As you know, we run our own training school. And before she came here in the same year, she had done her MSc from Gauhati University. She is basically working, apart from this work, she is also working on hadronic physics of ICAL. ICAL is one of the detectors, the main detector, I would say, of INO project. And incidentally, she also has a postdoc in her hand now, and soon, maybe in a month or two, she will go to Weizmann Institute. She is more wiser now, so that's where she is heading to. And there, she is supposed to work on xenon dark matter experiment and also the ice cube experiment. I am sure many of you know. This is the one which has recently discovered the most energetic cosmic ray particle coming from the intergalactic source. With these words, we'll start today's talk. The plan is that since we said divide and gain, so we'll divide our talk between two of us. You will see after maybe few slides, what this the meaning of this is and how dividing actually helps you gain rather than, normally we know that of course if you unify things come better. Before I come to proper topic today, I would like to take you maybe more than 120 years ago when this the most famous detector in the, at least in the sphere of let us say nuclear and high energy physics was invented by Wilson, CTR Wilson. And you also know more than me possibly that it has contributed so significantly to discovery of positron, muon and kaon. Okay. And incidentally, I must also share one facet about this detector. These detectors now, maybe these and even bubble chamber and such kind of detectors, now we call them so called non-electronic detectors, because you can't detect, you detect the signal, but you can't record the data electronically. Okay. You will see what I meant by saying. So these are like films or such things where you have to emulsions and you go and actually trace the tracks, but not actually reading the data into computer. So called non-electronic detectors. But then, you know, this is again another famous particle detector way back in 1928 by a guide and his student. And I am sure all of us, before we came to join TIF or any research institute, this is probably the only device whom probably we got familiar with. Wonderful device, even today it works beautifully, except that it is, as you can see, it is a single wire anode and has a window through which the ionization what you want to record can get into, and the data really can be recorded in this case electronically. So this is the first, you can say, detector which from which the data can be recorded, unlike the cloud chamber and bubble chamber. But many of us consider the real first modern electronically read out gaseous detector is the Chapox multi-wire proportional chambers. This is a more recent, in 1968, and as you know, it has contributed so significantly for the discovery of W and Z and CHAM and top quark. Okay. So the point I was maybe trying to say is that how every time there is a new detector on the horizon, how it actually changed the face of phase and pace of, let us say, the discoveries, the physics discoveries. Okay. Now we'll come to with those at the background, we'll come to more closer to what we will be talking about, the device called resistive plate chamber. And this is not something which is just born out of blue. There were, in fact, the very first detectors which can be called in a genre of these detectors are what is called PPCs or parallel plate counters. As the name says, instead of a wire and let us say cylindrical thing or like a matrix of wires, as in the case of multi-wire proportional chambers, you actually have two plates which are parallel to each other. So that is how the name comes. These devices, which were built in 1949, of course, were not so popular because the gains of these devices were rather low, and so there were problems of not so good electronics become available where you could build external electronics to amplify the signals, etc. But this has really opened up a new field in the so-called parallel plate chambers. Okay, and what you see below is a more successful one, what is called Pestov counter, named after one of the inventors. This device, as you can see, it is a sealed device with a very high pressure. In fact, you will see why I am saying about high pressure, because you will see the RPCs that we use are at the atmospheric level, but these are like 10 bar. Okay, very thin though, about 100 micron possibly the gaps, and very beautiful. It works, gives you fantastic timing. Those days it used to give few tens of picoseconds, but the problem is the aging, because you are operating them at such a high gain. So it used to, in fact, the electrodes used to get damaged and so on. So this is, I would say, one device before the real RPCs came up, but the more closer, let us say, predecessor. Then came the device that, as you see, the first paper announcing the resistive plate chamber by Santanico and his colleagues in 1981, and I kind of in that same mode of what I wrote in the earlier transparencies, I also wrote that possibly this has contributed very well to the discovery of Higgs, because both the CMS and ATLAS uses RPCs in a big way. Now, the authors say that RPC is nothing but a Pestov counter, except that you make a very, drastic simplification. So, for example, one of the big change in that you see is that they are not operated at a very, very high atmospheric pressure, but they are operated at a ambient pressure. And also, it has become more of an open device. And there are the materials that were used is also more commonly available materials, like, let us say, glass and backlight and so on. So that is what the authors meant by saying that this is a simple device. So it also becomes therefore economical to build large area detectors. So that is how this device was born. So this is our real plan of the talk today. So we will describe a little bit how this single gap RPC works, and talk about our development and characterization, particularly done in this institute, and maybe a few words about what is its current status. If you have done some R&D, we really want to see how they have been deployed, especially in the IKL experiment. And then, as a natural extension to this R&D, we are now taking up the multi-gap RPC. So we'll have basic principles of multi-gap given, and then we'll describe how a six-gap design was chosen by TIFR and it was built, and how we optimized and how we actually characterized using this experimental setup, and we will make a few remarks about what possibly can be done in future. So in the very simplistic term, the basic single gap RPC, the single gap refers to a gap which is made, one gap which is made by using two. Now we know this is parallel plate chamber. Okay, so the parallel plates are in this case high resistivity electrodes. It could be like glass, it could be like bakelite or any other material. We happen to choose glass because it is locally available very easily at that moment. And the two glasses which are held well in parallel with some spacers, and the glasses are painted on either side by a paint or a graphite, on which you apply a potential of, let us say, around 10 kilovolts of that order. And then you flow a special mixture of gas through them. The gases compositions are given here, and we will go ahead and we'll actually see how the signals actually get generated. But once they're generated, they are picked up by the external readout strips. So I want you to little bit notice one big change in this compared to the devices that we have seen before. What you saw, like GM counter and so on, you apply the bias on the anode wire, and you also pick up the signal from the anode wire, of course, with some decoupling and so on. But the beauty of this is that the pickup and the bias are actually external to each other. So there is no electrical connection, you can say, between the biasing of the device to the pickup. And the other advantage is that the readout strips being something external, again, as an independent part. In principle, tomorrow you can kind of change the pitch of the readout strips, and you will have totally a new device, you know, hopefully with a better spatial resolution. But you are not changing the actual act, you know, the gas gap, what we call gas gap. So these are some of the advantages of RPC. So how the basic thing works, so let us go through through few slides. So these are the two glasses that we are talking about. So let us say there is a gap of about G distance, and then you have this is anode, and let us say the two, that is where you applied the potential. Now when the charged particle goes through electron, I mean there will be ionization, and electron ion pairs which are produced, they start drifting towards, for example, the electrons will start drifting towards anode, and so in that process it will also create you know, avalanches, more avalanches on the track. And then once the cluster actually reaches the anode, of course it the cluster eliminates, basically discharging this anode plate. Now the charge that is induced on the pickup panels in principle is contributed by both electrons and ions, but as you will see, since electrons move much much higher drift speeds compared to ions, so you will actually see that most of the signal that is contributed, which means the signal that is induced on the pickup panels, is more contributed by the electrons in this case rather than ions. So the prompt charge, the charge that you are picking up through the external device, is more or less dominated by the electrons. Now the same device that you saw before, you can actually operate them in two distinct modes, physically the same device, you choose different high voltage, you choose different gas mixture, then you can actually operate them in two modes. What are they? One is the more what you call proportional mode, is also called avalanche mode. So the same like what I mentioned, when a charged particle goes through and ionization take place, that the avalanche that is building up, let us say, will start affecting the uniform field that you saw in this case, let us say E 0, right? But then of course the charge builds up, and essentially the electrons being faster, they go and you know, go and reach the anode first, and you can actually see that locally very small area there is a discharge of the anode plate, and then the ions will of course reach much later. Okay. Now in this case the gain is moderate, and I mean I have given some numbers, you can see that the charge that is produced, if you want to compare with the let us say somewhat higher gain, you will actually see that it is almost factor of 100, but of course you have to pay some price for it. In this case, so the steps that happens is something similar, but here you you allow for example the photons induced streamers to go get along, and then they will give you much much higher avalanche that is taking place, and you can almost see like the streamer that is formed will make a blind spot, because the total charge that is produced inside is very very large. So the area that is also discharging on the anode and cathode plates is also quite large, which means it forms a kind of discharge or a kind of blind spot. Of course, blind spot, why I am saying blind spot is, once such a discharge reaches, the charges reaches the anode or cathode plates, that area momentarily becomes inactive until of course your power supply charges these electrodes. So that is the dead time of this device. So naturally the dead time will be much larger in this case compared to this. Now also there are a few things, obviously if you have small charges produced inside the device, which may be good for the aging and other point of view, but you might need to have an external amplifier, because the signal may be too small, 1 picocoulomb kind of level. But in this case the signal is so high, so big, so you do not actually need any preamplifier, right? And so therefore this is you know, works longer period, but maybe the life of this device will be much shorter, similar to what we described about the Festo counters. Okay. Now, yeah. In the streamer mode, they are about 0.1 centimeter square. So that is the dead spot, and that will die until let us say a few tens of milliseconds, because you basically, you know, it's like a tau, right? So you have the gas resistivity, and the path is through the gas, and then glass. I'm sorry, not gas. And so the capacitance of the glass, which is you take the permittivity and you calculate, it may be around 10 to 20 milliseconds. Yes. Right. Broader. Yes. 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 It will create much. So the total charge produced is also higher. At the same time, the blind spot that I was talking about here will also be larger. So I think you brought a good point. So the thing is that it is almost clear that you don't want to use these kind of devices in a very, very high counting rate environments, like for example if you want to use an accelerator. But if you are trying to use it in a, let us say, cosmic ray kind of experiment, I think you are fine. So you have to really see what is your counting rate that is expected. So therefore you have to use one or the other. Apart from the fact that also, I mean, there are many scenarios. You know, olden days you didn't have a very good preamplifiers to work at, let us say, 1 gigahertz kind of a bandwidth. But now that have become quite common, and thanks to all the LHC and other experiments. So therefore people now would like to go and operate them at a lower gain kind of devices. So
But actually, I saw after glass, there is a graphite coating, and then after there is one insulator also.
Correct.
What is the role of that insulator?
Role of the insulator above the graphite?
Yeah, above the graphite.
Okay. Okay. Above the graphite, you have see, this is the glass which is ending at this light gray. This one. After that, this thick one is the graphite coat, right?
Yeah.
And that is on which you are applying 10 kilovolts, isn't it? And then on the top you have pickup panels which are at the ground potential. So you would like to isolate them, no? Otherwise, if you put a metallic strip on the carbon on the high voltage, then of course you know what will happen, and it's 10 kilovolts.
So again, the same streamer.
Huh? No, this is 8, and this is this. I mean, much less. And okay, maybe I should have. Sorry, I didn't. No, 10 power 8 is, you know, actually 10 power 8 is a Ritter limit, you know, something like alpha x, I will just talk about, it will go to about 20. So that will give to about 1 electron primary becomes 10 power 8 electrons. But I should have been more reasonable, I should have said this is 10 power 6 typically, 10 power 6, about factor of 100. Yeah. In this? Okay. Oh yeah, it will increase again. That's what I mentioned. There are two parameters. Device is physically the same. The two parameters you actually control essentially is the effective Townshend coefficient, which is based on the high voltage that you apply and the gases that you supply. Okay. So otherwise, there is no change in this. On the left hand side here, you will see just in the next slide. In both, it will come from both. The question is that when you talk about either with the streamer or avalanche, the only thing is this prompt signal which you will actually use will be contributed by electrons in both cases. That is same. The only thing is if you want to control the total charge, that you will also see that you are only collecting a few percent, for example, maybe less than actually 1% of the total charge that it is produced inside. But if you want to wait till the ionic charge as well as the electronic charge you want to combine, of course, you will get a very big signal, but then that may not be prompt if you want to use it for, let us say, timing and trigger. So that is how you have to choose which mode you want to operate. So you may get a smaller charge, but you would like to trigger it very, very fast. Whereas if you wait, you will get the ionic component as well, but that will delay the things. The total charge. Yes. Because there is timing resolution typically is about, actually many of them are there in the coming slides, but they are typically about 1 nanosecond. I mean, you are asking to compare them. Yeah. Of course, this will be much noisy situation. Okay, but the question is, since the pulsite is very, very large, so you want to bear saying that I don't need to use electronics. But here the noise is much better under control. Yeah.
Hmm. So why, like, you consider the option of metallic coating? Because you said that when the charge discharge actually reaches the electrodes are dead for a particular
period. The charge that is produced is what is inducing signal outside, right? Now, if you cover the entire thing into with a metallic plate, you can't induce signal outside, no?
Metal has a higher conductivity than graphite, for sure. The power supply will be able to charge
Yeah, yeah, in that sense that is correct, but the problem what happens is that you will not, the detector will not even work. You are just shielding the shielding the charge like a Faraday cage, so you don't even see a signal getting induced. Okay, I am a little afraid I will run to so please allow me to go somewhat quickly, and then maybe myself and Moon will take yeah. Oh, okay. So can I move? Yeah. So now there are so the question about the gases. Okay, here in the avalanche, of course, we have basically we use R134A, which is a C2H2F4, which is a form of a freon, and that is also uses as the ionizing, as well as it is also highly electronegative gas. So it can actually capture the free electrons which are produced here and which are not forming the main signal that you want to detect, and something like this. So this is your freon, and these are the loose electrons that are coming up, which is called electronic attachment. And you can also use sometimes if you don't have enough field at a region, some of the electrons and ions which are produced may recombine. Okay, if the fields are not very strong, producing very high energetic photons. So these are the ones I was talking about in the streamer mode. If you don't capture those photons, they can actually start forming a much higher ionization, and then that is how the signal become very big. But if you want to combine and make it a very controlled and avalanche kind of operation, so you actually also require to control them, which most of the time we use an isobutane to stop these streamers. SF6, somebody was asking, SF6, the main component is similar to what it is done by R134, except that it is very strong electronegative component. So it will avoid, if you are operating in a region where partly the signals are getting into the streamers, so this will actually stop those streamer transition. So you actually get a very clean what I call the prompt signal. So it doesn't lead to the secondary signals which are produced, because they get into the streamer signals. Streamer signals are very big, and sometimes they can actually spoil your front end electronics if your dynamic range is not properly taken care. So the main point is that the growth of the avalanche doesn't matter whether it is in the left or right. You really have to control by forming let us say your the effective Townsend coefficient. We'll actually see later. Now if you reach, in the case of streamer, if you reach this number, which is like Rieder limit, about of the order of 20, that corresponds to 10 power 8 electrons multiplication, then it will become very unstable. But what is important to see in the device is that when you apply such a field, that of course there is uniform field, but then when the avalanche starts happening, you will actually see there are three distinct regions. At the center somewhere, you will see the field to be much less than the the uniform field, whereas on both sides, you will, because of the space charge effects, basically you will see very large field. So please remember that in the case of single gap RPC, the space charge effects are very strong, both to the both anode and the cathode or electrodes. Okay, and so therefore you should not say just it is only dependent on the fixed Townsend coefficient, but the Townsend coefficient itself is a function of effective field. Effective field is not just the uniform field, but the field that is what is getting built as the device actually generates. So I would like to kind of skip this, but I just wanted to tell to answer one question. Okay, or maybe let me go quickly. So the thing is, the number of ionizing particles that are actually crossing that gap with a dimension of g, for example, you may have about ng, which is total average number being let us say n. Now you can of course calculate at any given point of time how many electrons, basically this is an exponential formation. So what is the total number of let us say the electrons that I have at any given time or any given distance. So from there I can say what is the actual signal that I am going to pick up, and what is the total charge, which includes ionic charge as well as the electron charge. What I wanted to tell you is that if you really take this ratio, it is much less than 1. So you are picking up very small part of what is actually produced inside if you don't pick up the complete charge. But we do it deliberately, because the most of, as you saw, because of this very strong fields here and here, the most of the charge, most of the signal is actually built very close to anode, in this case electron, similarly for ions. Now If you, again, without going into more of those the formulations, but I just want to bring a few points to your note. For example, such a device, when you have a large, let us say, number of clusters that are produced inside the chamber, the efficiency, the intrinsic efficiency does not include any of your pickup or electronics or something like that. If that is only depend on the total number of clusters that are produced and nothing else, it does not depend. So, it only depends on gas and gap, if you remember the effective Townsend coefficients that are talked about. Similarly, the intrinsic time resolution is also only depending on the effective Townsend coefficient and the drift velocity. It does not depend on the threshold, it does not depend on any other parameter. You can actually very quickly see, if you see an effective coefficient of, let us say, around 10 or so, and take a typical electron drift velocity, then you will actually see that the timing, somebody was asking, it comes to of the order of about a nanosecond. So, that is what you will see, the measured value is typically around a nanosecond is what you get. Okay. Now, one point about the dead space that Krishnan asked. So, every time you have such avalanche that is formed, of course, it goes through the graphite layer. You also ask the graphite. So, you can actually think of that as a spot that is produced on a detector device. Now, obviously, the surface area of that depends on what is the total charge that is produced inside. So, that is how, for the streamer mode of operations, since you have large charge that is produced, so that means the blind spots will be much larger. So, hence that controls the counting rate capability of a device. So, this is very important. Okay. Just talking about why we took up this work to develop the single gap RPCs, I just want to show you this slide where I try to list out all these existing, and maybe some of them are no more operational, those experiments which uses RPCs, and you can actually see one column where the total area of that operation is all given, and the ICAL actually comes somewhere here. You can really see it is a large proposition to build very large number of RPCs. These are of course going to be built used in an ICAL experiment, which is as you know, it is a neutrino physics experiment going to be built below mountain range near Madurai. How are we going to build this detector? We have these chambers which are inserted between layers and layers of iron, which when you stack one after the other comes to a detector which is of this size, about roughly about 5 story building. So, something like 48 meters by 16 by 15 meters. Now, the way you are detecting the signals here, of course, is particles which are, for example, in this case, if you are looking at the neutrinos which are passing through the detector and produce the interactions by passing through alternate layers of iron, and the particles which are produced in this case could be muon, could be electron or hadrons, are actually crossing the resistive plate chambers, the parallel plate chambers. That is why it is important to have the parallel plate chambers, so that they are all inserted into these layers and which pick up the signal and of course, produce finally whatever you are looking at. In terms of the number that we want to build these detectors, as I mentioned in the previous one, so about 30,000 chambers of about 2 meter by 2 meter in area, and you will read them using about 4 million detector channels, electronics channels. The RPCs which are produced still at, we are at the single gap RPCs, which we are produced when we want to characterize them. We have a very nice method of just looking at the so called IV characteristics, similar to what you do for a diode. And this tells you that when you increase the voltage, it forms basically the ohmic part through the spacers, and once the chamber starts operating, you have a large current that is seen here. And you also look at, of course, the standard ways of looking at the charge distribution, the efficiency of particle detection, and the timing. This is ultimately a very important factor for us to look at the timing as the particles are going through, traversing the detector. We would like to kind of know whether the particles are going from up to down or down to up. This is so called directionality. And after building those devices, of course, we have set up a large number of test stands in TIFR, the two of them in VCC and in Madurai. This one is a 2 meter by 2 meter RPC stand, which is the real baseline design for the ICAL experiment. Some of the results, even with such a modest detector stacks, you can actually do tracking of these particles. These are muon tracks. You can also look at when you do a pickup, the signals you are picking up, how many strips there it is firing, what you call multiplicity. You can actually see that most of the signals are confined within one strip, and this is the distance that is given. and in case the signal is going between the two strips, the track is going between two strips, of course it will, the charge will be shared by two strips, but you can really see that it falls off quickly once it comes to the center of the strip. You can look at the efficiency of all these such RPCs which are made here. I mean, the white spots that you see, the red is more or less close to 90 to 100%. These spots are because you use those buttons to hold these two glass plates together, which is an inactive area. So it is good to see some kind of a tomography of the detector itself. Even with such a small detector, you could also look at the directionality of the particle. Even in this stack, we only see all the particles, all the muons coming basically from top to bottom. So we see a small misidentification, but otherwise you can even find out the directionality. This you also can see the muon flux measurement using just only about 12 layers of RPC, and these numbers that we obtained is quite close to the earlier experiment. So the point is that these devices are, this is not to do physics here, the idea is to characterize these devices and get confidence that these can work pretty well. And then we went ahead, once we got confident that these devices, we are able to develop them quite well. So now we went into going to industry, optimizing, just doing things instead of doing things in a lab environment, semi-manual or manual operations. So now they are all done automatically. The painting is done by such kind of device where, you know, kind of jets like this are used to paint them in 2 minutes instead of doing manually. You make the RPCs using such kind of automation, ZIG and so on and so forth. You also need a gas system to operate these RPCs, right? I mean, that is what we talked about. So you all, we also built our own closed loop gas system where the gas goes through, mixes and goes through the RPCs, and then you pick up the gas, purify it and put it back. And remember that we need to use large amount of gas, almost about 200,000 liters of gas. So we can't afford to throw them because it's costly. Secondly, it is inside a cavern, inside a tunnel, so we can't of course throw. So we built this kind of device. What I wanted to tell you is the R&D that we really started maybe around almost about 13 years ago. Okay, this is the, in fact I wrote here that NKM and CELF went to Mahmud Ali Road to buy the glass, and so this happened in September 2001, and I measured what is the bulk resistivity of this glass and so on. And now we have a situation where we can automatize using local industries, and in fact the order for about 400 such RPCs will be placed very soon. So the local industry certainly is a big player in the ICAL. So we didn't stop here. We know that we have reached probably end of R&D for our single gap RPCs which are needed. I told you how unprecedented the sizes and the total area of the RPCs for the ICAL experiment. So we are confident that probably we can handle these things well. So we thought, why not we do something further? And so this is what I said, multi-gap. The physics that we, I mean the detector physics or the detector operation that we described is something very similar that will happen for multi-gap. Okay. This device is a more recent one which came up in 1996 by this set of gentlemen. He said that our goal is same as a single gap RPC, except that we want to improve the timing resolution without sacrificing the good qualities of RPC. Okay. Same statement you heard when Santanico and Party said that the idea is that we want to build a PESTA counter, except that we want to make it very, very simple to operate and therefore economically feasible. So something similar. Now the simple technique is, two things that we should remember for single gap is that you have one gap of, let us say, 2 millimeter. So the timing resolution is fixed by the gap as well as the drift velocity, which is of course decided by the gas compositions and so on and so forth. So you can't really have less than 1 nanosecond timing resolution in a single gap. Okay. The other fact is that because of the very, very high space charge effects, you have a large charges that are produced. Okay. Now if I want, without sacrificing much on the efficiency of the detector, if I want to improve, for example, the timing of the detector, what do I do? The simple fact that comes is just divide that gap into very, very tiny gaps. So instead of 2 millimeters, maybe make it 200 micrometers. Okay, so maybe make it 6 gaps, maybe make it 5 gaps. So what did you achieve in that? What I achieved in that is the gap becomes small, so the charges travel lesser distance, so therefore I get a good response, timing response. But do I sacrifice anything? No, because these glasses which are mounted in the middle, they are basically transparent to the charges produced in any gap. So therefore, if I put a pickup panel on the top, the pickup panels will see charge off from any of the gaps or the summation of all the gaps. So therefore, you have not compromised much on much, I would say, on the charge that is produced or the efficiency of the detector, but you have tremendously improved the timing resolution. So this is all the simple technique that people use, and in this case you apply a voltage right on the outer electrodes, the other ones are actually kind of left floating. So internal resistive plates are all electrically floating, they take the correct voltages due to electrostatics, but you might think that if I have a charge that is produced here, as you saw that the charges are amplifying and going and reaching the electrodes, so who maintains then the changed balance, okay? Because the amount of electrons reaching the anode is something similar to the ions reaching the cathode. So at the end, you will see that there is a balance, there is a equilibrium that is going to reach, so which will maintain the total stable equal gain between all the gaps. Even if by chance one of the gaps have become different, but it will has this self-stabilizing aspect, because of the gain of each gap will adjust the flow of electrons or positive ions between them. Time constant to that, I think it is about a millisecond or a little less than that, because these are now no more 2 millimeters, 2 or 3 millimeters. Now these are typically, Moon will talk about, a few hundred microns, so it is much faster. So the resistive plates, as I said, are transparent to the signals generated inside the gap, so therefore induced signals I can always have same pickup panels. Now, So the real game is here. The real game is the thin subgaps, the optimized gas parameters and controlled avalanche and differential signal readout. We also improve further in the case of single gap, you actually read, I forgot to mention to you, but this is a good point. This is, you have a gas gap, but the pickup panels are actually mounted orthogonal to each other, one on the top and one at the bottom. The idea is that one single active gas gap, from there you can actually get XY positions of the track. Okay, this is very beautiful about RPC, but in this case, to just improve the timing further, it becomes difficult to do a good timing with a single-ended electronic pickup. This is more of an electronic issue. So people prefer to do a differential readout. So I have pickup strips which are parallel to each other, top and bottom. So I read the signal differentially. So that is what gives you really exceptional performance. One such device, the most successful story I must say about the, yes.
Sorry, glass tips.
Yes.
Over that time,
yes.
The surface remains the same smooth
thing,
or will there be any small
abrasions? Yeah. Gone case. Yes. You are talking about MRPC or talking about SFP?
MRPC.
This is a perfect question actually. The thing is, when you have 2 millimeter gap, 3 millimeter glass, even if you go to Muhammad Ali Road, you get, of course, few hundred nanometers signal. That is what the first study that I have done. And there they are less more pardoning, in the sense of, even if there is a geometrical little bit of a problem, it is not going to kind of hurt you. But here, when you are talking about fields of about 50 kilovolts per centimeter, and then the surfaces are only 200, 300 micron, the mechanical tolerance of these devices becomes extremely important. And once you have one local discharge, then it will of course become a regenerative, and then it can completely discharge and spoil the device. So you have to be really, really careful. Even the gas purity, what you flow here and what you flow, even in avalanche and streamer, actually I have written what I did not write, mention those points, they are quite different between them. You have to really make very pure components. So since I am a little bit running short, so I will just, very last slide. So the Alice MRPC has not just one MRPC, but you can say two MRPCs which are padded back to back, which each 5 gaps here, and you can really realize that this is the timing resolution you can get of the order of 50 picoseconds. And what I wanted to really show is this is the real fantastic plot that you can see, the particle identification of let us say pion to kaon, these two up to almost I think about 2.5 GB, and from kaon to pion again, proton again to around 3 or 4, maybe 4 GV, it can very beautifully distinguish just using the timing information, the time of light information, which is because you are able to, in fact this this was possible because you have a devices which can give you better than about 100 picoseconds, and this time of light is about 3.7 meters. So with that you are able to measure so accurately and gives you such an idea of the particle ID. So yeah. Yes. Gas will flow, she will talk about, Munu will talk about, gas has to flow of course through all the gaps.
So,
sure. Gas has to flow, In fact, it is more tougher now to flow because the gap is thinner. Okay. So, just one slide before I hand out to Munmun. So, since this device is so great and it can actually give you a fantastic timing, people are talking about why not we find an alternate method to PET imaging, which has been dominated by so far by the silicon industry, scintillation crystal industry of you know all this what I have shown. For those of you you know, this is all dominated by the by this detectors so far. The way this works is if you flow let us say a tracer element using the using unstable let us say particles here, and then the positrons which are produced by this radio tracer will go and hit with electrons that are in the body and produce two basically 500 kV gammas which will come flying just 180 degrees apart, and then the point is to be able to note down the direction. That means they are really coming back to back, and they are also want to see that they are in the coincidence. So, the timing is important here. You also want to look at the like the pulsite spectra, because you want to see that whether they are really 500 keV, 511 keV or not. So, these are all done by this device. Now, since you have a good detector efficiency and spatial and timing resolutions for the MRPC, now that is being proposed for the new generation PETs. So, here the photons of course need to be you need to use converters. So, you use multiple stacks of MRPC to a level of around 20 gaps are used to produce to a level of around 4 to 5% of efficiency, and sometimes you even coat these glasses, not just ordinary glasses, but coat them with let us say high Z materials like lead and other things, so that you can also improve the conversion efficiency. So, this is already coming up and becoming quite successful. So, with this now I request Munmun to start her second part. We will take more questions. Go ahead. Saurabh, if you don't mind, I didn't see hear your question, but we'll answer after.
So, am I audible? Okay. So, how much time do I have?
I'm so sorry.
Okay, so so far you have heard about the story of the single gap RPC and the necessity of going for the multi gap design, that we need a faster device, and multi gap using inserting multiple sub gaps would help us in gaining in the time resolution. So now I will talk about the our story, how we started and what we did. So like as you have seen that the work on single gap RPC that started from a scratch on in sometimes in 2001. So, we started in December 2011. So, we also started from scratch, but however, we were fortunate because already the development of single gap RPC was very good and we got lots of help. Okay. So, our proposed structure was a one with six sub gaps. So, these two are the outer electrodes which will be connected to the high voltage, and there will be five intermediate electrodes, those will be very thin, and basically there will be six sub gaps. Okay, so the outer two glass plates will have the conductive coat, and as I said that the high voltage will be connected, and you have already heard that the intermediate glass plates will be kept electrically floating, and they will be transparent to the first signals. Okay, so before optimization actually we had lots of problems. So first we started with a small dimension of 7.5 centimeter by 6.5 centimeter, and the intermediate glass thickness was 400 micron. So that detector was confined in a sealed enclosure through which the gas mixture was passed. So there was a question that how we ensured a gas flow through all the sub gaps. So I will come to it. Okay. So these are the snaps of the first MRPC we built. So you can see that these two are the outer electrodes, and these are the intermediate ones. This is the dimension, and these are the spacers. So these spacers also we have developed here. So I'll come to it. So the spacers are of thickness around 250 micron. So basically all the subgaps we maintain at 250 micron, and these are the pickup panels. Okay, so this is the first design, and if you go to Dr. Satyanarayan's office, it's there. So after building it, we recorded three events, but after that it stopped working because of frequent sparking and other things. Okay, so one main thing was that here the top and bottom electrodes, those were also very thin. The intermediate glass plates and the top and bottom, all the glasses were of the same thickness, 400 micron. And because of that, when we applied a high voltage across this detector, then always we had some sparking, and finally the detector broke down. But we didn't get disheartened, then we wanted to make a bigger one. So we switched to the bigger dimension. Now now what we did, the outer electrodes we kept as 31 centimeter by 31 centimeter, but intermediate ones are 10 inch by 10 inch, so 27 centimeter by 27 centimeter. And this outer electrodes thickness now we are using as 2 millimeter, and intermediate glasses are same as 400 micron. And again we use the sealed envelope for the gas flow. So you can see that this is the gas inlet and this is the gas outlet. So gas is actually passed through this enclosure, and this MRPC is actually immersed in the gas mixture. So the problem was the alignment of the external trigger, because to test whether the detector is working properly or not, we have to use some external detector to test it. We have to use an external trigger to check whether the detector is actually recording events or not, and also ensuring a proper gas flow through the subgaps, because now you see that there are so many places here which will offer very low resistance to the gas flow compared to the subgaps where the width is actually around 250 micron. So then we go to the optimized design. So here this one and this one, they are the 2 millimeter thick outer electrodes, and these are the intermediate ones of 410 micron, and all the subgaps are around 250 micron. And these are the outer pickup panels. Okay. So now the outer electrodes, the conductive graphite coat, the value of the surface resistance is in the range 0.5 to 1 mega ohm per square. And we use some spacers which we fabricated in our lab, because one challenge was to try to keep the subgaps as uniform as possible. And also so that we have less dead space, because the more spacers you use, that means the more dead space will be in the detector. So what we did, we used some two-sided non-conducting adhesive tapes. Those were of thickness 100 micron, and we used a mylar sheet of 70 micron, and then we pasted the two non-conducting adhesive tape on both sides of the micron, and then we just removed the outer covers and made some first we made some small buttons out of it, and then whenever we use, we just move out of outer layer and use it. So here you can see that for Our detector, I mean, which is the outer glass area is 31 centimeter by 31 centimeter. We use 25 spacers, 5 in a row. Okay. And, sorry? To actually see, I mean, give the spacers the strength it required, and also I mean our required dimension, because if you use only one two-sided adhesive tape, then it is 100 micron only. So if you use this also and then both sides two adhesive tape, then it will give us approximately 250 micron. That is the sub gap which we desire. No, actually we see, I mean the spacer should be such that, I mean, whenever we place the thin intermediate electrodes on it, I mean the gap should be as uniform as possible. So that means, I mean, you should actually use as much spacers as required. So we just use this much, we use 5. I mean this 6.4 centimeter gap is okay, I mean it will give you a proper strength, I mean the sub gap will be almost more or less uniform.
So the spacer is the same between any two gaps, upper one as well as lower, right?
Yes. Okay. So now I come to spacers and blockers. So you asked the question that, I mean, how we ensure the gas flow. So yeah, I mean, and as I said that this configuration, we were having problem of aligning the scintillator pedals, external triggers also. So now we wanted, I mean, what we do for single gap. We use some spacers, actually, I mean, this top and bottom electrodes, which are of thickness 2 millimeter, we want to make a chamber out of it. Within that chamber, those intermediate glasses will be there. Okay. So these are the side spacers. Then what we did, we designed some blockers. Now, if we do not have these blockers here, that means suppose these two are the gas inlet and these two are the gas outlet. So, most of the gases will pass through this road, because the intermediate glasses are within this area only. So, this is a free area, and it is more likely that the glasses will gas will flow through this and go out of the outlet. So, what we did, we designed some blockers. So, this is a blocker. So, we placed the blocker in the side spacer, and then two blockers at each inlets and one blocker at each outlet. So that means the gas need to pass through the sub gaps and then need to pass through somewhere here to go out of the outlet. Okay, so these are the side spacer, this is the gas nozzle, and this is the blocker. Okay, so I mean after we did that, I mean it's more or less a good gas flow was ensured through the detector. Okay, so now I'll come to the experimental setup. So we designed developed three MRPCs, and then used a cosmic muon telescope to test it. So that telescope was formed using three scintillator pedals, two on the top of the first MRPC and one at the bottom of this. So all of them were aligned on a single strip of the, I mean, one strip of the MRPCs. Now, whenever a cosmic muon, cosmic particle is passing through this system, if, I mean, this P1, P2 and P3 are in coincidence mode. So, whenever a cosmic muon passes through these three and all of them gives the signal, then we get a trigger. So, now we see with respect to that trigger, whether these MRPCs gave a signal or, I mean, recorded an event or not. So that will give us the efficiency of the MRPCs. And this is the perpendicular view. So the MRPC strips are 2.8 centimeter, while the scintillator pedals are width 2 centimeter. So this is the perpendicular view. Okay, so this is the view of the setup. I mean, there are three MRPCs. These two are the top two pedals, P1 and P2, and there is one more here, this is P3. So, this setup is there in the lab near the recreation center. So, sometimes you can come and see. Okay. So, this is the raw pulse from one MRPC. So, here, I mean, this trigger was given from a twofold coincidence from two scintillator pedals. I mean, there is one MRPC, then two centrotor pedals, one at the top and one at the bottom. So this is the trigger, and you can see that the positive, negative and positive pulses from both sides of the pickup strips.
What is the time axis here? How much?
Sorry?
Time axis.
Time axis, I can't see it actually.
Actually, around 8 to 15 nanoseconds.
Yeah. So 20 nanosecond, if I remember, it should be 20 nanosecond. Yeah. So now the data acquisition system. So before going to our data acquisition system, I just want to mention that we use the NanoASIC, which is now being used for the Ellis time of flight experiment, because now MRPCs are the optimal detector for the Ellis time of flight experiment, and for that they designed one fast preamplifier. That is Nano. So each of the chip has got 8 channels, so we can connect to 8 pickup strips, and those are quite fast. So this is one circuit of the Nano, but then this is a Nano chip. So it is basically a cascaded amplifier, and it will give a differential output in the LVDS format. Okay, so this is the DAQ scheme. So we wanted to study the counting rate of the MRPC strips. I mean, actually, how many pulses we are getting, then the efficiency. So with respect to this trigger scheme of this scintillator pedals, how much of the out of some trigger, how much actually gave signal in the MRPC? So that is basically the MRPC efficiency with respect to the trigger, and then the time count. So most important, we wanted to have a faster detector, so we want to check the time resolution of the detector. So this top one is the trigger scheme. So we used these 3 scintillator pedals, and they are given in coincidence. And then from MRPC, the signal is given to the NanoASIC, and then the differential output of the NanoASIC is converted according to our requirement and given to some scalar and TDC counters. So when it is given to only the scalar to scale, actually how much pulses we are getting, so that will give us the strip counting rate. It is independent of the trigger, but for the time counter, we give the start from trigger, and then the stop is coming from the MRPC. And for efficiency also, the trigger and the count from MRPC, that is given in coincidence mode to get the efficiency. Okay, so now I will come to the characterization. Okay, so in the previous part of the talk, you have already heard about the gas mixture. And so we operate the MRPCs in avalanche mode, where we use the freon, isobutane, and SF6. Freon is the electronegative gas which is responsible for the ionization. Then isobutane and SF6, they are basically quenchers. But the difference from SRPC is that here we use higher SF6, because we apply one reason is there are multiple sub gaps, and these sub gaps are divided by some very thin glass plates, and we apply a higher voltage compared to the single gap RPCs because of these glasses. Now if we want to maintain the same potential drop across the gas, compared to the single gap, then obviously we have to apply more high voltage to this, because now there we have more glasses here.
How does the voltage scale up the number of glass plates you put in?
Yeah, so directly I cannot tell you, but like in our case, what happens that single gap RPC, it operates at around 9.8 kilovolt or so, but we are operating at even 17.9 kilovolt, and there is scope to go beyond, without breaking down the detector. Okay, so the first task was to optimize the gas mixture, because now because of this higher SFC, higher voltage, and then multiple gaps, we can apply more proportion of SF6. So first we did a study to optimize the SF6 concentration, as well as that will also change the other two gas mixtures also. So the isobutane proportion we kept fixed at 4.94%, so approximately 5%, and then these two proportions SF6 and freon are varied. So this is the characteristics with various concentrations of SF6. Isobutane is fixed and freon will vary accordingly. So we see that in this region you can see that efficiency is good, and then counting rate, I mean, now since SF6 is the quencher, if you increase the proportion of SF6, it will affect the counting rate. But we see that in this region the counting rate does not get attenuated much, I mean it is within a reasonable range, and also the chamber current, that is IV characteristics, that also in some reasonable range. So we decided to keep the SF6 concentration at 4%. Actually we are doing some more study on it, so that run is going on, so I haven't shown those results here, but I mean for the time being we have optimized the gas mixture with 4% of SF6, and with that the gas composition where 91% of freon, 5% of isobutane and 4% of SF6, these are the characteristics. So first I show the efficiency versus high voltage. So you can see that even at 17.9 kilovolt we get around 95% of efficiency, and our aim was to get a detector which will give us a good time resolution and not at the cost of the other characteristics, like efficiency and other things should also be good, then only we can use it in various purpose. And then this counting rate and chamber current, they are also reasonable. Just we had a shortcoming that our high voltage modules would enable us to go up to 18 kilovolt only, so we couldn't go further. So for that we are now planning to have some other configurations like the double stack one that is being used in Alice, because then I mean if you have a double stack, that means you have actually two MRPCs clamped together, and both of them, if you the net voltage given to such a double stack will be, we can go to double of this. Okay, so now the preliminary application we did with MRPC. So we used MRPC in the trigger scheme for a